Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Today we're going to focus on the treatment of personality disorders. And again, just like we talked about yesterday with the assessment of personality disorders, treatment is a little bit difficult to talk about.
I'm smiling because I'm thinking about adding something at the end of this.
What?
No, I can't tell you. It's a surprise.
You're going to add it to the
end?
I'll
surprise you.
Well, the treatment of personality disorders is extremely challenging. One, because as we've talked about over the course of the week, many times individuals with personality disorders don't really come to treatment, at least not very consistently, so that we can really get a good idea as to as far as what is going to be really beneficial and what is going to have sustaining benefits
Right.
for the patient.
Yeah, one of the many problems with personality disorders, first of all, there's 10 of them.
Right.
Right. And so you have to look at each one separately.
Right.
Okay. It's not like depression is depression is depression. These are 10 different entities.
Right.
They have some common features, but they're 10 different entities. And you might need a different therapy for each type, for each person.
Right.
But the second problem is, as you say, people with personality disorders tend not to perceive that they have a problem. Many
right.
don't don't come in for treatment.
Right.
But even those who come in for treatment frequently blame others
right.
for their problems.
They only come in because somebody else is...
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, somebody else is giving me a hard time. Mm-hmm. I'm distraught because somebody's giving me a hard time.
Right.
Somebody's making my life difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's after me. Somebody is disrespecting me. And I can't get along with family members because of the way they treat me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's always other-oriented, or frequently it's other-oriented. And it's very difficult to do therapy for a person who sees the problem existing elsewhere
right.
rather than themselves.
Absolutely.
A person who's depressed comes in and says, I feel terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's something wrong with me. I feel terrible. Whereas
right.
the person with personality disorder frequently comes in and says, I'm having a hard time because of others.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it comes to treatment, just as is the case with almost every mental health concern,
mm-hmm.
There's not really a cure. There's no real cure for a personality disorder. There's some interesting research coming out now as it relates to some things that can be done I don't want to use the word, it's not fringy. It's very interesting
research.
You would say
they're still in the experimental stages?
Still in the experimental stages.
Right.
Even with the use of like psilocybin and things like
right.
that has shown to maybe have some ability to adjust or change or shift a person's
mm-hmm.
overall personality. That research is still really in its infancy, and it's not anywhere close to a recommended treatment.
Right.
But there's some hopeful, research out there that's looking at that.
Some emerging
right.
research.
Right.
Because once again, and you said, you put your finger on it again, that this is a person's basic personality,
mm-hmm.
and where does personality become a personality disorder?
Right.
And do we have the ethical right to tinker with a person's personality?
Right.
We know that we can. Do we have the right to do that?
Right, right.
The other problem with, you know, that we've mentioned before is that even in DSM-5, half of the volume is devoted to certain disorders, many of which respond to medication.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Then you have this little section in
right.
section 2 for personality disorders that we typically say they don't respond to medication.
Yeah.
Okay, these are disorders, they're characterological disorders. They're
right.
not
right.
what we, they're mental health disorders, but they don't come in that same category
right.
of depression and anxiety and all that.
Right.
So these are of a different color for sure.
Right. So yeah, there's not a lot of, I've certainly seen physicians prescribe medications mm-hmm. for personality disorders. Right. That's really just to deal with certain symptoms.
That's right. They're really not treating the personality disorder.
Right.
They're treating associated symptoms.
And it's usually agitation or anxiety or something like that.
That's right. Hyperarousal, depression, anxiety. So you can treat all of those things, but that puts us back to comorbidity, that you have a personality disorder. There's no reason why you can't have a personality disorder and depression or anxiety or any of the other substance abuse disorder.
Right.
Okay, so you can medicate the symptoms of that associated disorder. You don't medicate a personality disorder.
Right, right. So the primary treatment for personality disorders is therapy.
Some kind of therapy.
Psychotherapy. The most common, the most hopeful, I suppose, are some of the various forms of cognitive behavioral therapy, such as cognitive behavioral therapy, dialectical behavioral therapy, interpersonal therapy, and some of those. Those are the best we have, it seems, now.
That's what we have.
But one of the things we're going to get into in just a few minutes is the issue of chronicity. You know, how chronic, when you think of personality disorders, this is who the person is.
That's right.
And so typically it's who the person is and has been most of their, if not all of their life. And when you have anything that's going on that has been that persistent, that long lasting, the treatment is going to take a considerable amount of time.
That's right. You're talking about the essence of who a person is.
Right.
And you don't change that quickly. First of all, they've been doing it for 20 or 30 or 40 years, so it's a deeply ingrained habit that's hard to change. Or it is the essence of who they are, and that's very difficult to change. If you're an extrovert, you're an extrovert. It's hard to turn an extrovert into an introvert.
Right.
You know, all week long, as we've been talking about this, I've been trying to capture in a sentence, what is it about personality disorders? Because we've gotten some questions from viewers and listeners that are really good, stimulating, provocative questions. And all week long, I've been trying to figure out a way to encapsulate personality disorders in a sentence or two. And I think the best I can come up with, it's how a person perceives himself or herself. It's or how you perceive others, or how you think about the world.
Right.
Okay, so it's kind of those three things. It's very, very difficult to change those, I don't know whether they're called opinions or worldviews, or your view of yourself. I mean, if I perceive myself a certain way, it's going to take you a long time to change that self-perception.
Right.
If I see other people as threats to me, if I've been doing that all of my life, it's going to be very difficult for you as a therapist to change my opinion.
Right.
If I see the world as a dark and dangerous place, it's going to take you a very long time as a therapist.
Right.
So I think it's the way we view things. So the treatments then all center on trying to change your viewpoint.
Right.
And that becomes very difficult.
Right.
You mentioned dialectical behavioral therapy as
which is really good for borderline personality disorder specifically.
And teenagers.
Right.
Because teenagers have some of the same characteristics, right?
Right.
No, we that's true. The dialectical behavioral therapy, because, well, let's go back to the beginning. You were talking about cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a way of changing how a person thinks about things or reacts to things in their world.
Yeah. And so the goal is to, again, shift some of that, some of the thoughts and behaviors. But the, also as you said, the challenges is that we're working to change your natural reaction, natural perception of things.
That's right. It's your basic temperament.
Right.
And we're saying, forget all that.
Right.
You can't forget all that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really challenging. And so it takes a long time, pretty intensive as well.
I got a call the other day about a young man who's afraid to fly. That's not a personality disorder.
Right.
He has a specific fear of flying.
Right.
Cognitive behavioral therapy with him will be very different because we're just working on a single behavior.
Right.
But if you're working on how a person sees the world, it's a much larger challenge.
Right.
Much more difficult.
Right.
sometimes almost insurmountable challenge. If a person has been doing something, reacting the same way for 40 years, it's hard to turn that around.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's extremely difficult. That doesn't mean that a person with a personality disorder shouldn't seek treatment.
Exactly.
It just means that you have to be prepared for some duration, because you're not going to get immediate results. You're not going to have an immediate relief of those symptoms.
Yeah, these aren't things you're going to do in 10 or 12 visits.
Right.
We get to dialectical behavioral therapy. Mm-hmm. It's a relative newcomer compared to the others. And dialectical behavioral therapy basically says, you're okay the way you are. Mm-hmm. What you're doing is not terribly abnormal. It's part of who you are. It's part of your character. And you sort of offer this acceptance. Mm-hmm. Rather than telling the person you're wrong, which you don't want to do with a person with a personality disorder, you accept who they are. That's why this works with teenagers.
Right.
Because you're saying to the teenager, I understand. I understand why you would feel this way. How you feel is okay. It's not abnormal. And you keep reassuring and reassuring. Once they've accepted that and you start working together, then you can help them start to think about things differently. When DBT first came out, I was teaching course I was teaching at the University of Texas, and it first came out, and I thought, wow, this looks really good. I thought, this is something that we might want to look at. So I went in, and there was one of the founders of DBT wrote a book, and they did some case studies, and I was reading the case studies, and it said visit 63, visit 72, and she was telling what she did at each visit 108, visit 125. She saw this person for 127 visits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you do, that's 2 years of therapy every week.
Right.
Okay. So when we talk about it takes a long time, it takes a very long time.
Right.
They're effective therapies, but you can't be in a hurry.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So there are a few other.
Yeah, there are two others.
Therapies, interpersonal therapy, again, is focused on helping the person appreciate and understand interpersonal relationships.
Right.
It's sort of like a beefed up social skills type of treatment to really help the person appreciate how those interpersonal relationships and interpersonal interactions work.
Right, and I like the interpersonal approach because you're moving away from there's something wrong with you to, okay, here's who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's talk about how you interact with other people. Let's talk about how you interact with your children.
Right.
Let's talk about how you interact, how you are at work.
Yeah.
Okay, those are behavioral things that are a little bit easier to change.
Yeah.
Okay. And the last one is family focused.
Right.
Okay. And I love family focused. I was working with a young man, he's probably in his 20s, and he has some of these personality issues. And he keeps saying, well, that's just who I am. And he's right. That's who I am. I said, yeah, but you've managed to alienate your siblings.
Right.
Okay. This is the effect that it's having on your siblings.
Right.
And he stopped and said, oh, well, I certainly don't want to do that.
Right.
And I said, well, that's what's happening right now.
Right.
And it was his, so then we moved the discussion from characterological flaws to let's improve how you talk to your siblings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
And then he got it.
Right.
You know, and that gave us a focus of therapy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's the same with family, and I like family therapy for the same reason.
Right.
But I have a question about that.
Uh-huh.
You do that, right? Family therapy.
Mm-hmm.
You educate the family to deal with the person with the personality disorder. You say, hey, look, your brother has this. This is how you should deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
Don't think of it as he's just nasty. The question that people frequently ask is, do I have the right, as a therapist, do I have the right to talk about a sibling as having a disorder? In other words, I'm sitting down, like, let's say you have three siblings, and one of them has a disorder, or one of them has a personality disorder.
Sibling A is
sibling
your patient.
Sibling A is the patient.
Okay.
Does anybody have the right to sit down with siblings B and C and say, hey, look, your brother has borderline personality disorder?
Mm-hmm.
Is that some kind of a violation?
It could be. You have to have consent. You have to have permission from the patient.
From the patient
to talk to the others. And even with that permission, Even with that sort of written, signed, informed consent, I think what I do, and I think what most people do, is I still consult with the patient about what I'm going to talk with the siblings about, just to make sure that the patient is cool with it and understands how that discussion will go
but
and the purpose of it.
That's a potential explosive situation because the patient could turn on everybody.
Right.
And say, well, you made me the problem. You know, which, again, we're talking about a person who has this viewpoint anyway. And now you're sort of open. I think of, let's have a family meeting and let's talk about sibling A.
My preferred approach to that is to, is if the patient is cool with it and everything, is to have the patient there while we're talking, while I'm talking to the siblings or while I'm talking to the other family members. And then I ask questions and set the stage in such a way that the patient can inform them. So it's not me saying this is what the person is, it's me asking a question so that the patient can use the words that the that's needed to talk with the family about it.
But you have to be careful.
You do.
When you do family, when you do family focused therapy, it, I love it because it's talking to the siblings and saying to them, hey, look, this this sibling has this view, and so you need to talk to her differently. You need to react to her. You know, when she flies off the handle, it's not an attack against you. It's more of an expression of how she sees the world.
And I rarely, in those situations, I rarely use a diagnosis to talk about it.
And that's the other tricky part.
Because what I'll say is, you know, we'll kind of say, you know, I know that we're here because you guys are having some difficulty getting along, because it sounds like, you know, you guys say something or do something and your brother will like overreact and he'll get loud and yell and all that. And so we're going to try to talk about some of that, some of what everybody's contribution is to that, what's happening that sets the stage for that, so that we can figure out some strategies for dealing with it and coping with it. So I don't, I'm more solutions focused. There's another type of therapy called solutions focused therapy. I try to use that approach as opposed to, you know, talking about what this is. I mean, sometimes you have to say, you know, this is what bipolar disorder is, and this is why.
That's true. You know, the child who has rage attacks, you know, the other family members have to understand that this is not some selected behavior that I decided to lay. This is something that that I can't control. And because of that, the other families have to be brought into the solution.
So, so yeah, that's some of the different therapeutic techniques that's used. Other treatments for personality disorders include residential facilities.
That's really...
And there's a variety of them. You know, day programs, long-term programs. There's some in this article that we're referring to that's in the show notes. They refer to luxury.
That's where I'm going. I'm going to the luxury personality disorder facility. I'm going to have massages and rundowns. And,
So there are those kinds of things, intensive outpatient. And those are for really severe forms. I think that most people with personality disorder concerns, you know, they're going to just get outpatient treatment, if any. With the cognitive behavioral and other therapeutic techniques we were talking about.
So. Yeah, there's one other that, I guess maybe we should have begun with, we should have started the program with this one because it certainly came first. There is a psychodynamic approach. Psychodynamic refers to Freud, you know, psychoanalysis. That a person has a personality disorder because of some event from childhood. And it's not a, it's not typically used anymore, and you have to be very careful when you use that because you start to move back toward very young children, you know, those, and then you say, well, you are this way because you were traumatized as a child, and then you get into recovered memories and all that stuff, and so there's a, this has led to some ineffective and often harmful approaches, but it's worth considering that something could have happened in childhood, and we're talking about by age 5 or 6 or 7, that changed a person's temperament or personality. But it takes quite a lot.
It takes a pretty substantial,
a pretty good wallop. of either significant neglect or significant trauma mm-hmm. to change somebody's personality.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So if you're of that theoretical persuasion, mm-hmm. certainly investigate the possibility of early trauma, mm-hmm. but keep in mind that it takes a lot of mm-hmm. damage.
Right.
I mean, people are pretty resilient.
Right.
And kids can take all of us can take quite a bit of abuse before it changes your personality.
Right. Okay. Right. So, and that how we perceive abuse is all different.
Exactly.
You know, what I see mm-hmm. as abuse may be very different than what you see as abuse.
Or right. I may call it abuse and you may call it spanking.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah.
Be careful with those.
And from there, that's where we get like attachment theory.
Right.
Because attachment theory talks a lot about early emotional and developmental attachments between right. the child and the parent that begins in the first year of life. And that if is maladaptive or broken mm-hmm. or
damaged
pathological
in some way
right. then that could begin one on the path to some personality
but you have
issues.
To keep adding to it also
right,
you
right.
know, it's not just a single event
so. Absolutely so
be careful with those
so you know that is that's a really most of what we know and most of what we think about when it comes to treatment.
Surprisingly little
yeah.
about these disorders.
Right.
But again, I think we were much more tolerant of, you know, we used to say, oh, she's, grandma's a little, or Aunt Bertha's a little quirky, you know.
It was Aunt Bertha.
Yeah, she's a little quirky, you know. Well, you know Aunt Mary, she's a little bit bizarre, you know. And we used to be a little more tolerant, mm-hmm. I think, mm-hmm. In times past,
right.
where it was quirky behavior.
Right.
And now we're sort of pathologizing it.
Right.
But it's okay.
Right.
It's okay to pathologize it because if it affects the way you get along with people,
mm-hmm.
if it affects your relationships at work, mm-hmm. then it's a problem.
Right.
You know, again, it's always that issue of impairment.
Right. Now, one of the things we wanted to address today was a great question that we
yeah.
were asked on through a Facebook or mm-hmm. I'm sorry, not Facebook, YouTube post.
Right.
And the question had to do with, you know, sort of if the question basically is, if personality develops in, you know, begins personality disorders are rooted in early childhood experiences.
Right.
What is it that contributes to the idea that a person may eventually develop a personality disorder as opposed to eventually developing what was referred to in the post as a psychological disorder? And so there's two points of this that I wanted us to address. One is this idea of personality disorder versus psychological disorder, and that's going to be more of a sort of an academic response. And then this idea of how we get on these different trajectories as it relates to, you know, a personality disorder versus a other form of mental illness. That's not, you're looking at me.
I'm confused.
So
no, you're talking, well, to be specific, how does,
like, why would a person develop obsessive compulsive personality disorder as opposed to obsessive compulsive disorder? And so that seems to be the crux of the question.
When I first saw this question,
mm-hmm.
I looked at it and I said, I have absolutely no idea. That was my first response. I thought, wow, I don't know. And I had to think about it a little more deeply. Whoever, the person asking this question has obviously thought deeply about this issue. It's an excellent question.
Right.
Because it pertains to all 10 of these diagnoses.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, to try to answer the easy one first,
right.
Psychological disorder versus personality disorder.
But personality disorder is a psychological.
It is a psychological disorder. And there used to be a bit of a divide between, you know, what we would call
yes.
clinical mental illness, depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, those guys, and personality disorders. And in previous versions of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, we had clinical diagnoses on axis one, and we had personality disorders and intellectual disabilities on axis two. And so they were sort of seen as two different groups of diagnoses. DSM-5 has changed that, and they have gotten rid of the axis system, so there are no
right.
There's no longer an axis 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's they're all considered mental illnesses or psychopathology or psychological disorders.
But we still conceptually think of them as being different.
We do, because, and it has to do with the pervasiveness of it. You know, when you look at the diagnostic criteria for depression, for example, which actually is going to be our topic for next week. Mm-hmm. When you look at the diagnostic criteria for depression, you know, it says that you feel down or sad most of the day, nearly every day. So it's not all the time you're depressed. You know, 24 hours a day, every day you are depressed. That's not the diagnostic criteria for depression. That is sort of the implied diagnostic criteria for for the personality disorders. This is who you are. This is who you are all day, every day. And so I think that is a big difference between these two classes of mental health diagnoses.
But you're not, if you have a personality disorder, you're not depressed every day.
Right. Right. No, I'm talking about the whatever the criteria is for that particular
right.
personality
you might
disorder.
Be an introvert. Mm-hmm. You might be withdrawn, mm-hmm. you know, but you're not depressed.
Right. Right.
If you're depressed, you're depressed.
I think you're getting stuck on depression. If I was thinking about depression, the depression is most of the day, nearly every day.
Right.
Okay. If you're thinking about schizoid personality disorder, you are asocial. You are, you know, not interested in making relationships.
Well, comparing depression to schizoid.
No, I'm comparing a clinical diagnosis and a personality disorder.
Right. But when you use the example of depression, if a person is depressed, a person is depressed. Clinical diagnosis.
You're hurting me.
I'm sorry. I can't touch you.
What I'm saying is that when you're talking about clinical diagnoses,
right,
whether it's depression, anxiety, ADHD, whatever, those symptoms are there, and those symptoms aren't necessarily a problem all day, every day, everywhere
you go. They
are
not who you are.
Right.
Okay.
Personality disorders
are. You have
a
personality, and now you hit it. Now you're depressed.
Right.
Okay.
And that is.
But there is no analog for depression in personality disorder.
I'm not saying that there is.
Yes, you are.
No. I was giving example of a clinical diagnosis.
We're plowing up some new soil here.
I'm giving an example of a clinical diagnosis. You can choose any clinical diagnosis you want.
They're confused.
Pick any clinical diagnosis.
Depression.
Okay. Pick any personality disorder.
You can't.
That's not related to depression. Any.
You can't.
Why not?
Because there's no analog.
I'm not saying that there's an... See, folks, this is...
No, but you're saying...
No.
But,
I'm not saying
you
that.
You did, but...
No, I didn't.
We'll go back and play the tape.
We can. All I'm saying is that clinical diagnoses are, you have symptoms that persist for a period of time or in particular circumstances or in particular situations, or there's some finality to it.
Let's go back to the fear of flying.
Okay.
Pathological fear of flying,
right,
is what you're calling a
clinical diagnosis.
A clinical diagnosis.
Right.
Okay. There is no analog over in the personality disorders for fear of flying.
Yeah.
Personality disorders are your basic temperament.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, and this is what makes the reason this question was so hard to answer for me is because it gets to the heart of what a personality disorder is.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're talking about a person's basic temperament, but it's the way they see the world and the way they react to events in the world.
Mm-hmm.
On a day-in, day-out basis from birth to death.
Okay.
It's just who they are.
So if we want to use that definition and use what you were referring to in my example, is that there's no analog to that for clinical diagnoses.
No.
Right. So what I'm saying is that there are two different things because of that. I was using two examples, not because there's an analog between that, not because they're related or similar in any way. I'm giving an example of how they're different because personality disorders, it's the way you see the world. This is your life every day, all day, every day. A clinical diagnosis is not that pervasive.
But going back to your example, the example that, the mm-hmm. listener gave was OCD, because there you do have an analog.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, they didn't give that example. We were talking about.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But if you use OCD as an example, how do you know whether it's obsessive compulsive disorder mm-hmm. or obsessive compulsive personality disorder?
Right.
And the way you do that is there are characteristics of OCD,
right,
the clinical diagnosis, that don't attend to obsessive compulsive personality disorder.
Right.
They are two different disorders. They're right. not on a spectrum.
Right.
They're two different entities.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Because there are characteristics that must be met
right.
to have a clinical diagnosis
that
are not part of the personality diagnosis.
Right.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I think that so that goes to the other question that this viewer was asking, but the I guess the what we were trying to get to is that all of the disorders, clinical disorders and personality disorders, they're all psychological disorders.
Right.
It's just the difference is, if there is any difference, has to do with the pervasiveness of it and just the influence it has over your overall life long term. Personality, you know, for the most part, it is what it is and will be that. Depression, you may be depressed for 2 weeks, but then you're not depressed. You're not going to have any of the personality disorders for a couple of weeks and then not have that personality disorder for a while. It doesn't, they're different in that sense. Otherwise, again, they all kind of fall in that same umbrella of psychological disorders. I don't know that there's any research out there, none that I could find in any search that I've done, and none that I've certainly ever read about what increases the probability of somebody, you know, developing a personality disorder versus a other psychological disorder.
I don't think you develop a personality disorder.
Boy, this is going to be a good conversation. What do you mean?
It doesn't appear at age 30.
No.
It just
talking about how something could happen in childhood, and then depending on what continues to happen, that could increase the probability of having a personality disorder. And so using the word development in the broadest sense, that's the development of a personality disorder, right? Or are you referring to more like organic development?
Right. Yeah, we've been saying all week that this is something you're born with, or that appears very early in life.
Mm-hmm.
It is who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So to say it develops, you sort of give the implication is that, well, you might be this person until you're 25 and then suddenly
no.
become this person at age 25.
No, but we were talking earlier when we were talking about attachment theory. We were talking about how things can happen that will change a person's temperament.
Right.
That has to happen early in life.
But it has to happen very early.
Right.
But it still is who you are.
Right.
Over a very long period of time.
Right. And there are those who believe that if you identify some of those traits or characteristics very early and provide early intervention, early treatment, you can, you know, minimize or decrease the severity of a potential personality disorder later in life.
You can address attachment.
Right, right, right.
Mm-hmm. But not temperament.
Right, but you can address some of those issues.
Sure, it's
early.
Like giving medication for
right.
symptoms
right.
that could
right.
attenuate.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So. So I see what you're saying about development. It's not like...
Remember ADHD.
Uh-huh.
Got to have it before...
12.
Right.
Uh-huh.
You don't get it when you're 35.
Mm-hmm.
If something happens at 35, it's not ADHD.
Right.
Or maybe you had it all your life and it wasn't diagnosed until 35.
Right.
But it has to appear before a certain time.
Mm-hmm. You make me want to have like really big conversations, because intellectual disabilities are considered developmental disabilities,
right.
even though that has to occur before the age of 18.
Mm-hmm. You don't get it when you're 25.
Right, but it's still referred to as a developmental disorder.
Neurodevelopmental. Mm-hmm. Neurocognitive.
But it has traditionally been referred to as a neurodevelopmental
disorder. But not if it's at 35. If it's at 35, it's the result of something else.
Right.
You weren't born with it.
Uh-huh.
If it occurs at 5, you were born with it, typically.
Right. But if we're saying that personality disorder is who you are from the time you were born, then why wouldn't it be a developmental disorder?
It's not a developmental disorder. It's a personality disorder.
Do you see what I'm saying though?
No.
Why would intellectual disability be a developmental disorder because you were born with it, but
that's
a personality
just,
disorder wouldn't be?
How they did it in the manual.
I know. But
organically, it's not. But you already know that.
I do.
You're just being dirty.
No,
so, it's not a developmental disorder.
This is the challenge with all of this. This is where the
That's why this question was so interesting, right? Because it got to the absolute essence mm-hmm. of personality disorder.
Right.
The viewer, listener?
Viewer. It was YouTube.
It was absolutely right.
Yeah.
You know, this is the core of this issue of personality disorders.
Right.
How do you differentiate?
Right. Mm-hmm. But this is
an excellent question.
And these are the conversations. Actually, this kind of conversation, what we've been having for the last 5 or 10 minutes.
3 days.
Is really the reason that we even started the podcast, is because we would sit down and have these kind of conversations
right.
and discussions, because it is, you know, we think of so many areas of medicine as clear cut.
This is how it is.
This
right.
is just how it is. And, you know, certainly these are different. And I'm going to go back to it just for a moment, because it's that pervasiveness, that developmental pervasiveness that resulted in personality disorders and intellectual disabilities being placed in the same axis in previous versions of the DSM, because they were considered unchangeable. You know, you can't take a person who's intellectually disabled from birth and significantly change their intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
You can give them skills, you can give them strategies, you can improve some things,
mm-hmm.
but you're not going to take somebody who had a 63 IQ and
you're really going out on a limb.
No, I'm just saying.
I agree.
There are limits of the types of improvement that one can make, and they can, you know, you're not going to do that. So, and they considered personality disorders the same way for a long time.
They still do.
They still do in many ways, mm-hmm. but I think that the DSM-5, by taking away the axes and kind of putting everything together, I think it's sort of an encouragement to start considering it differently. DBT contributed to that because of the relative effectiveness that it's had with borderline personality disorder. If some of these things can be changed, then maybe we should think of them more clinically as opposed to more, untreatable.
Although we just spent a week.
I know.
Saying the opposite.
But it's where they're trying to go. And what I think it is that DBT, for example, I don't think it changes their personality. It just changes the way the person interacts with other people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
so,
what we said.
Right. So... You know,
it doesn't
autism.
Change the per- it doesn't. You're not going to change a person's basic temperament and
right.
personality. You can change the way they interact with the world.
Mm-hmm.
You can change some of the ways that they interpret
mm-hmm.
what's going on in the world. If you take a person who is paranoid,
right.
paranoid personality disorder, they're not fearing for their lives
mm-hmm.
like a person with paranoia does,
right.
like someone is out to kill me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but they have this view that people are out to take advantage of them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. You're not going to change, you may not change that, but you can change how they interact with people.
Right.
How they
You
how
can give
they
them
interpret.
Strategies for coping with those
right.
things.
When a person mm-hmm. says this to you, this is how you should respond.
Right.
We give people scripts and we give
mm-hmm.
them because we want to change the way they interact. We're
right.
not you're not changing their basic personality.
This is much like what we talk about with autism. Because autism isn't curable. We don't do away with autism. We provide strategies and skills for managing particular circumstances and different situations and different things in life. But you don't cure autism, just like you don't cure personality disorder.
I think the one of the places where it might help to unscramble this is that when we talk about the clinical diagnoses, we're talking about phenomena that we have found ways to medicate, chemical treatments, depression, anxiety, because they clearly have some anatomical, or not all of them, they have some anatomical neurochemical correlates. You can't medicate a temperament.
Where I see,
and I think that's what started this. It's response to treatment is another aspect of this that we really didn't talk much about during the week. You're talking about it now. You know that DBT, you know, you have a response to treatment, and so maybe we should think of it more clinically and less as a separate entity that can't be changed.
Right.
But these other things, substance abuse and anxiety and depression and ADHD and all those things, do respond.
The way that...
But you can't change mental impairment.
And this just came... This sort of attempt to explain my perspective just came to me, and maybe this will help to explain where I am. The clinical diagnoses, depression, anxiety, and so on, the symptoms that constitute those disorders are consist of behaviors that are different than the person is otherwise.
Right. They're anomalous. That's,
right. If you're depressed, that is a clear difference by definition of a depressive episode. It's a very different set of behaviors and circumstances and worldview than when they're not depressed.
Right.
Same with anxiety, same with ADHD for that matter, and so on. With personality disorders, it's not like that.
That's right.
It's the way, it's the pervasiveness, it's the way that they are all the time. And that's was kind of goes back to the examples I was giving, that it's the clinical diagnoses, there is some finite presentation to them. They, you know, you can see when the depressive episode starts and you can see when the depressive episode ends. You cannot do this, do the same for any of the personality disorders.
Except that for the average person, the other family members, one family member can be dysphoric for long periods of time.
Sure.
And years and years and years and years.
Yeah.
You're just the kind of person you are. Anxious. You're just
generally anxious.
Generally anxious over many. Is that a clinical diagnosis or a personality? And that's the difficulty
right.
here.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's what we have been saying all week, is that you can still have dysphoria that doesn't have a clear beginning or a clear end.
Right.
At least to family members observing it. It's still a clinical diagnosis.
Oftentimes, though, when you talk to those folks, and maybe there are, maybe I can think of a couple of non-examples, but oftentimes, even with them, they'll say everything was fine until they were like 14, and then when they turned 14, like, you know, it's, she's 18 now, and she's been depressed since she was 14. So yeah, it's been a long time, but before then, she was okay.
But there are other parents who go and say, "Oh, she's been like this since she was 3."
Yeah,
you know, now she's 21.
Yeah,
and she's always had this sort of, well, maybe it is a per. That's where the diagnosis becomes challenging.
Right,
is that. Yes, you're right. It might be a personality disorder and not a clinical diagnosis. Mm-hmm. But that's where you need the skilled eyes and hands you need the eyes and hands of a skilled clinician.
And that's where it's going to take time to make the diagnosis. You
that's
know,
right.
with a clinical diagnosis, you know when the person walks in.
True.
Not that fast, maybe. But, you know, within a session or two, you know what's going on. With a personality disorder, sometimes you need... you know, several sessions before you really start to get a handle on what's really happening.
It's called clinical humility.
Right.
You know, you learn over time that careful with these diagnoses. It takes a little humility to be a good clinician.
Yeah, it's tough. And it takes a lot of pride. You got to see a lot of people to be able to differentiate some of these things. So, so again, but such an attempt, I guess, to answer the question, the what results in the different diagnoses has to do with the chronicity, has to do with, you know, that early temperament, that those early life experiences. You know, the earlier you start seeing some of those things, the more likely it is to be a personality as opposed to a...
And with the clinical diagnosis, there are criteria. There are things in the clinical diagnosis that don't exist in the personality disorders.
Right.
Okay. So, well, when I got out of bed this beautiful Saturday morning here in muggy Florida, summer muggy Florida, I had no idea that what was awaiting me.
It was exciting.
Interesting.
Yeah. I like these kind of conversations because it's, you know, again, these are the stimulating conversations I think that we have to have about some of this. And, you know, there's some other topics that we want to do that
what
too.
What I like about these is that these are not carved in stone. These diagnoses are clinical diagnoses. That means they're based on observation, clinical observation and knowledge. And I'm glad we have these discussions because it sharpens the focus on in places where it should be sharpened, where we should be questioning what we do and how we do it.
Right.
So I'm appreciative of that.
Right. Yeah.
Even though you're wrong.
And I know that when we have these discussions, it changes, like it changes the way that I approach things with patients sometimes because you have to think about it a little bit differently.
No, it makes me think about it different. That's right. I will think about this differently from now on.
And it gives me patience when I work with people like who are stubborn. So that it's like practice.
Makes me a better clinician working with someone like me.
That's right.
Makes him better. That's why I'm here.
I appreciate that.
What else?
I think that's it.
Next week we're going to talk about depression.
Yes. Next week we're going to focus on depression.
But just
going to be
what's called unipolar depression.
Unipolar depression.
We decided that it's better not to try to mix.
We were going to do mood disorders.
Right, mood disorders.
And
right.
So that would include bipolar disorder and depression. But we decided we're going to do those two separate. We're going to do depression next week and bipolar disorder the week after.
So if you have any questions about depression, let us know and we will be sure to address them as we move along.
Yeah. We're also going to try out some new things next week. With our
a technology update.
We're going to give it a shot. We'll see how that goes. We're trying to make some changes. We've been, you know, we've talked about our Patreon page and some of that stuff before, so that as we get more support, we can try to improve what we're doing because of the time and everything it takes to edit the videos and all that. It becomes very difficult for me to do that.
Right. If you're going to communicate with us, if there are some things that you think we should be doing differently, let us know. We have very thick skin.
Yeah.
Obviously. We're both housebroken. We have very thick skin. We are put in our place on a regular basis, so we can take it.
If we can.
We'll take any criticism, any suggestions, any recommendations. Remember, we're all in this thing together. We've said that before. I would appreciate any suggestions you have that could possibly make the program better.
Yeah, yeah.
More appealing, better, happier.
Yeah.
However you want to put it, please don't ever hesitate.
Right. You can do that over either through YouTube in the comments or on our Facebook page or Twitter or even on our or in any of those.
We don't pretend to have all the answers, obviously. Today was a good example of that. We don't pretend to have all the answers.
But nobody does.
But we are here, we're available, the doors are always open, and we would love to hear from you.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let us know, and we'll keep doing what we can to make things better. We're hoping that what we do next week it just improves the overall look of the videos and improves the sound of the podcast. And we'll just slowly kind of increase from there. We're still hoping to be able to get somebody to come in and do all the editing for us so that we can really get the videos and all the way that we want them to be. But we're going to give it a shot, maybe starting next week, hopefully, if everything goes as planned. So
constant improvement.
Yeah, that's the goal.
Edward Deming. It's another story.
All right.
Okay.
Well, that is it for today then.
It's been a pleasure.
Were you going to add something else you said at the beginning?
No, it's okay.
No?
I might eventually. I was thinking about it.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. All right. Well, until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid. Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you will find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We'd be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening. Have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning. Thank you.